Rasmita Sindhu, continuing with the first division, chapter 2, Sadhana Bhakti, discussing the 64 limbs of devotion. Now there's 44 limbs of devotion that we're discussing. These are all important. Most of them are connected to the giving pleasure to the deity, the worshipful deity within one's life, temple or house deity. And yesterday we heard about chanting japa for the pleasure of the Lord. I'm chanting mantras and stavas and prayers for the pleasure of the Lord. And engaging in sankirtan, congregational chanting for the pleasure of the Lord. And submitting one's inner feelings, vigyati, towards the Lord. Reading prayers from the scriptures called stava and pat, Bhagavat pat, Srimad Bhagavatam. There's many prayers there, prayers of personified Vedas, in 10th canto, and also Venu Gita, etc. Now this is number 37, this is limb number 37, which is tasting food offered to the Lord. Here it says, honoring the edibles offered to the deities in the temple, because that's the Lord appearing before us. Dupamalya, oh no, no, it's Naivedya Padaya. I don't see the commentary here, just in this particular book. And some other commentaries I've read on this Bhaktirasa Sindhu, because I gave class several years ago on Prabhupada's Nectar Devotion, summer study. This is verse by verse. And in that, in those commentaries, there's sometimes some confusion about Naivedya. Naivedya means the Mahaprasadam, remnants from the Lord. So we should, of course, it says, honoring the edibles offered to the deity in the temple. So often when you visit a temple, the pujari will give you some Mahaprasad mala, the garland from the Lord, or he'll give you some oil, sugandhi, or he may give you some chandan, some sandalwood paste to put on your forehead, or he may give you a ladu, or a piece of raw candy, misri, or sometimes makkan and misri, some maha butter mixed with raw candy. And then sometimes he gives you some sweets like this, ladu rasgulla, that's much rasgulla, some ladu, burfi. And then devotees, they say, oh, what do I do with this mahaprasadam? Is there some injunction that you shouldn't eat in front of the Lord? Maybe that's also here, we'll see that. One should not eat food in front of the Lord. So now I have this mahaprasadam that's been given to me. And sometimes, I remember when I first joined, devotees would be in a dilemma, be perplexed, what to do. So they would run behind some pillar, or run to the side, somewhere to the side where the deity, where they thought the deity couldn't see them, and they would look around like this and eat the sweet really fast, and in this way think that they're observing the proper etiquette to not eat in front of the Lord. In this particular commentary it says that this term is their naivedya. And naivedya means a very small portion of mahaprasadam from the deity, as mentioned, garlands, chandan, one or two sweets or whatever. And in the commentary it's saying that the Lord, he's very happy to see the devotees, the bhaktas, accept his naivedya in front of him. For example, if I, try to imagine, if I cooked some, say cookies, I made some cookies, and then you came to see me, and I said, oh, I made these cookies, they're very nice, and I offer them as cookie prasad. I say, you please take one. Then I offer it to you, and you say, thank you, and then you run and go and open the closet door and go in the closet, and you eat the cookie and come back and say, what are you doing? Where are you going? Well, I don't want you to see me eat it in front of you. Maybe offense. Ill manner, bad manner. No, I'll be very happy to see you. I'll be most happy if you honor that or devour that cookie in front of me. I want to see the expression on your face. Do you like it? Did you accept it? Was it good? Is it satisfying? Is it pleasing to your senses? It's a good cookie or a bad cookie. You like it. If you're happy, then I'm happy. If you're pleased, then I'm pleased. So in the same way, Krishna, he likes to see, oh, are my devotees happy? Are they happily taking my prasadam? So these small items, when we receive them, we if we receive and say, oh, Jai Damodar, we just take it right in front of Damodar. We like, I've seen, I even did it when I first joined. So this is my video. Now the other injunction, how to harmonize the two injunctions. The other injunction says one should not eat in front of the deities. So honoring Naivedya, which is a small portion of prasadam, which is given to you by Krishna through the hand of the Pujari. Pujari is Krishna. Krishna's hands and legs. Everywhere are Krishna's hands and legs. So the devatas, the Pujaris, the Brahmins, they represent, the Brahmins represent the mouth of the Lord. They speak on behalf of the Lord. Wherever you find a Brahmin, you find Krishna, you find God. He's called Bhudeva, a god among on earth, Bhudeva. Bhudeva. Deva means God, Lord. So the Brahmins are called Bhudeva, lords of the earth, god of the earth. So they eat on behalf of the Lord and they're supposed to speak on behalf of the Lord. So there the Lord appears in the form of the Brahmin's mouth and his words, and he can take seva and he can receive charity and he can receive food and so much puja and worship. Namo Brahmanya Devaya, go Brahmanya Tayacha. Shrikatitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo. That the Brahman, Hitaya, the cows and Brahmins live for the benefit of the human beings. And God exists also for the benefit of the human beings. So when we worship the Brahmins, we're worshiping Krishna. He's very pleased. So therefore, wherever the, when the murtis are there, when we take, when the Brahman is taking the Mahaprasad and giving it to us, we didn't ask for it, we didn't buy it, it's simply given to us. This is special, this is mercy. This is prasad, this is mercy, Naivedya. So we should be very, thank our stars, or count our stars, as they say. Oh, I'm so fortunate, so much bhagya, so much fortune I have that I receive this directly. Krishna is giving me this. That's what the devotee thinks. If the garland falls from the Lord, or the pujari comes and takes the Lord's garland off of the neck of the Lord and offers it to you, this means that Krishna is giving it to you. Just like if I'm walking down the street with my son and I say, oh, look, there's a beggar there. And I take a $5 from my wallet and I give it to my son. I say, please give this $5 to the beggar. That often happens. So the son does that work on behalf of the father. And Pujari is the son of God. He's the personal assistant of the Lord. The Lord expresses his will through the Pujari. The Lord expresses his will. He expresses his heart through the Pujari, and there's countless examples of that. And the most glaring or prominent example is Jagannath Mandir. Jagannath Mandir and Sri Kshetra, Purushottam Kshetra, Jagannath often expresses his will through the mind of the Pujari and the king, Gajapati. He appears in their dream. He says, oh king, you should take initiation from Gangamata Goswamini. You made a great offense by arresting her. And you should surrender to her. And he appears in the mind of Hevajari. Oh, why did you have this Gangamata Goswamini arrested? You thought she was stealing the deity's jewels when you found her lying at my feet. Actually, I arranged all that. I made the Ganga flood, and the Ganga waters carried her into the temple because she's my great devotee and she wanted to have my darshan. So let her out of jail and take initiation from her. So these pastimes are there in the Gaur Parishad Charitavali. And the biographies describing the illustrious lives of the Vaishnavas. This is one famous Vaishnavi in Puri in the medieval time, in the 15th century, or 16th century. So the Lord expresses his will through the mind, through the dreams, and through the actions of his devotees. What to speak of the Pujari? So the Pujari gives us some Mahaprasadam. This is the heart of the Lord coming to us. This is the will of the Lord coming to us. It's very, very special. That's why when we receive something from the Pujari, we touch to our head, oh, how fortunate. How fortunate I am. Oh, my Lord. Thank you so much. You take, then, so we can see. Yes, see, you've given me this to me. This is your love for me. You're expressing your love for me, your affection for me, your acceptance of me. And I'm expressing my love. Thank you. So good. It's very good. Oh, Damodar, thank you for this one person. Oh, Govindaji, thank you. This is bhakti. Reciprocation of love. It's a flow. It's a movement. It's always moving from the Lord's heart to the devotee's heart, from the devotee's heart to the Lord's heart. One wave this way, one wave that way. Love wave coming from the devotee's heart and then falling on the shores of the Lord's heart, and then that love wave comes from the devotee, from the Lord's heart, and comes back. flows back to the heart of the devotee. So one should be clear, what is naivedya? So not eating in front of the Lord means that you sit down and have a full meal in front of the Lord, like a Sunday feast. Leave the doors open, make rows, everyone sit down in a row, and they start serving out the feast, and everyone's saying, hey, more halava, kaftaval, sweet rice, hey, come on. More, and then Lord is there. This is considered to be an offense, to eat in front of the Lord, to sit down and have your, in the mood of enjoyment or whatever, just to eat a full meal or to have, sit down and eat in front of the Lord. That is avodah. Because you are deliberately sitting there, you're deliberately eating as a conscious action from your side. It's not some special mercy arrangement from the Lord. But when you're just in a temple, walk in any old temple, it's not that everybody gets the Mahaprasad. There's only a little bit of Mahaprasad. For example, in Beni Hanuman Temple in Chakra Tirtha Road in Puri, they offer one laddu a day, basin laddu, and they offer so much rice and funny kind of things they have down there in Puri. Some flat rice and gore on a regular basis. That's the offerings to Hanuman, Beni Hanuman. But once a day in the morning, it's called Balya Bhog, Mangalarti. So it's called Balya Bhog. They offer one laddu a day, one basin laddu a day to Hanuman and other things. So if you go there, hundreds of people go there every day, so many yatris visit that temple. And if you get that basin laddu, you can understand that you're special. Whether the Pujari wants a big donation, he thinks you're a big fish with a lot of oil, and he can squeeze you. That's whatever he's thinking. Whatever it is, the Hanuman is dictated to him to pick you out of the 300 people, 500 people that come every day and give you the laddu. So how much special that, what does that mean? It means something very special. This is naivedya. So we accept it with, oh, We don't even bite it. We take the whole thing, so we don't have to wash our hands. We just toop, mighty boy, and we go out and wash our mouth outside. We close. So this is the 37th principle. Of course, this is a list of 44. So this, and list of 44. This is the 17th. So you can see, as you hear one by one, how every single limb of the 44 positive actions of devotion are all connected to the Lord. Lord means the deity, the Archimurti. We can't see. Can we see Krishna? Krishna, where are your edibles? Can you get some edibles? Oh, okay, come. The deity is there. So now, 38th principle is respect. Fully drinking the sacred water with which the feet of the deities have been washed. And this is a long way to say it. Now, if you want to say it a short way, tasting the foot water of the Lord. Bhana Maharaj is an expert in brevity. This is Bhana Maharaj's translation. Bhano and Bhan. Bhan and Bhanu. Bhan Maharaj. Bhan Maharaj is coming from the old school where editing wasn't a big thing back in the 1940s and 50s in India. They didn't so much care to be. They were rather long-winded. And of course, he was one of the most illustrious disciples and preachers of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. He was extremely successful in the European campaign for the Gaudiya Math. And he was often chosen, personally chosen by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati to represent the tattva of Gaudiya Vaishnavism in different public engagements. He would ask Bhan Maharaj to speak on the dais, on the pandal, because he was very, very intelligent and very highly educated person, very cultured Brahmin from birth. He could really speak Krishna consciousness. Bhakti Ridoy Bhan Maharaj. So he was very successful in Europe. And when they would come to Braj Mandal, he was one of the organizers. He was one of the first, his early disciple, joined much more earlier than our Gurudev, Srila Bhaktivedanta Swami. So when the Braj Mandal Parikramas were going on, he was one of the organizers, Bhan Maharaj, 1930s and 29, whatever, when it first started. And and he would give lectures to the different Vrishbhasis. So he has his translation of Nectar Devotion, which is only one wave. There's four waves. He only had four divisions. He did one division, Eastern Division. Purva Vibhag. So it's a very good translation, sometimes a little long. So this is the 38th principle, to respectfully drink the Charanamrita. The 39th principle is smelling the sweet scent of the flower garlands, incense offered to the deities. Smelling the incense and flowers offered to the Lord. Number 40, touching the Sri Murti, the deity. Number 41, looking at Sri Murti, seeing the deity. Sri Murti Sparsha Rikshanam. Sri Murti Srishti Rikshanam. Riksha means eyes, looking at the deity. Looking at the Sri Murti means drinking the beautiful form of the Sri Murti with our cups of our eyes. Like the gopis would drink the form. They were seeing Sakshat Krishna. And through the cups of their eyes, they would drink deeply the form of Krishna and take Krishna's form within their heart. And then they would embrace him, embrace the form of Krishna within their heart, in a very deep, loving embrace, full of faith and surrender and submission and dedication. So there's different ways to look at the Sri Murti. For the gopis, the Sri Murti is Damodar, Shamsundar, Vrajendranandan. For us, the Sri Murti is the Archimurti, the Vigraha, Giri Govardhan, Radha Giri Dhari, Radha Damodar, Govindaji, etc. But we can take the cue or the signal from the gopis and try to increase. In other words, there's looking, you know, we say we have this term in English, there's listening and there's hearing. Are you just listening or are you hearing with rapt attention? Are you seeing and is it deeply, what you're seeing, is it deeply registering in your heart? Or is it just bouncing, whatever object you're seeing, is it simply bouncing off your eyeballs? Some wave, some vibration of light hitting your eyeballs and bouncing off. Okay, I see this. Just like when you ride in a car, and especially in India, there's not much to see in the West, it's pretty boring. But when you ride in a car in India, through the towns and villages, there's so many things to see. Animals and people and cars and bullock carts and so many objects and shapes and colors and ladies and purple saris and green and yellow, this, that, and men with dhotis and so many. The landscape is multi-variegated. Lots of colors, lots of forms, lots of shapes, beasts, animals, birds, pigs, dogs, humans. So you ride down the highway, look out the window, thousands, millions of impressions, sights are bouncing off your eyes. Dong, 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 dong. But hopefully, none of those things are going very deeply into the heart. And actually, if our eyes are open, but we're chanting mantra, and we're trying to hear the Maha Mantra. And if we were really absorbed, we wouldn't have our eyes open at all. Our eyes would be closed, and we'd be seeing something internal, the form of Krishna, or pastimes, or something, deities, or just simply relishing the sound vibration of the holy name, and offering our prayers and moods and feelings of submission and longing to the holy name. But in absence of that, those levels of absorption, one may be sightseeing while he's chanting japa, taking in the sight. But this is not the way to see the Sri Murti. So Sri Murti Ikshanam, Sri Murti Sparshanam, Sri Murti Ikshanam. So not everyone can have the opportunity to do Sri Murti Sparshanam, to touch the Sri Murti. There must be some qualification. There must be Adhikara. You must be, the deity is Brahman, and you must be Brahman. Prabhupada said, if you want to enter fire, you must become fire. If you want to enter water, you must become like water. Otherwise, If you want to enter the fire and you go in this body, then you become burned. If you go in a fiery body, then you won't be burned. So if you want to touch the Srimurti, then first we have to have Diksha. You must become Brahman. Mam Chiyo Bicharena Bhakti Yogena Sevate Saganan Samatityayatan Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. By Avicharena Bhakti, then Avicharena Bhakti, we become free from the modes of nature, Saganan Samatityayatan. So Brahman initiation, and the ultimate meaning means this, Mam Chiyo Bicharena. Avicharena. Mantriyo bicharena bhakti yogena sevate. That we can serve sevate, we can serve Krishna, and we can have union with Krishna in service, bhakti yogena sevate. We can have union of Krishna in service when we are free from the modes of nature and we exhibit our Brahman like qualities, Maham Brahmasmi. This is the sarup of the jiva is Brahman. Every jiva is a particle of consciousness. Brahman. But this is specified Brahman. Brahman. Savishesh Brahman. Brahman with qualities, transcendental qualities. Rupam. We have a transcendental Rupam. We have transcendental Gunam. We have transcendental Namam. We have transcendental activities and relations, Seva, in relation to the Lord. So when we take Brahman initiation, then we can carry out number 40. This is number 40, or here it's number 20 of the 44 positive limbs of devotion, touching the deity. Otherwise, not everyone can touch the deity. There is some restriction, there is some prohibition, there is some qualification. Oh, where's your Brahman? Hey, get off the altar. You can't bathe the deities on Janmasthami. And I've often seen, I lived in Vrindavan, so many people would appear out of nowhere. And even what happened was that Indians are very clever people, actually. Very, very clever. They got the idea, the word was passed around, that if you don't have a Brahman thread, you can't come on the altar and bathe the deity. You have to be a Brahman. So then, known devotees from Delhi that I knew, that weren't even initiated, they would put on a Brahman thread and come on the altar in Krishna Balaram temple, Janmashtami. And they thought, well, we're in Vrindavan, these devotees don't know us. And I said, hey, what? And I'm rather liberal, but I'm not that liberal. When it's not even first initiated, and what to speak of, what principles they follow, whatever we knew of them was, I had my doubts, and it was a rather dubious character. And Mukunda would be there, hey, wait, where's your Brahman? And then, so they got the idea, I thought, Brahman thread. So they just ran across the street for 10-5 rupees and got a Brahman thread and put it on and came back. I've seen myself, even I know the names to this day. I said, hey, already. Where are you going? Oh, I want to be the deity. You said you have to have a Brahman thread. I have a Brahman thread. I said, okay, but that also implies that you're initiated. First and second, that's why you have the Brahman thread as a man. I said, oh, I thought, you know, that is sort of devious, clever type. No. And so I don't know how many people have been going on the altar over the years, bathing deep from Bombay, Delhi, etc., Ghaziabad, Fuzzy Bad, and Ghaziabad, and wherever bad places they come from. But they somehow managed to weasel their way on the altar and quote unquote get the mercy. Touch the deity, Sri Murti Sparshanam. But I don't know whether Krishna's very happy with that contact. So this particular limb of devotion, this number 40, is a special privilege of the advanced devotees that get to touch the Murti. And elsewhere in the Nectar Devotion it says when one touches the Murti of the Lord, then his desires become fulfilled. Because Krishna, he's a Kalpavriksha, he's the origin of all transcendental things, so Krishna's God. So if you touch God, whatever your desire is, then it'll be fulfilled. So watch out. If you touch the deity and you have the wrong desire, then that will also get fulfilled. Like the classic story of a man who was wandering in Bihar, and he was wandering here and there. He's just wandering. He left his home, he's just wandering. Bihar, UP. Then he came in this one forest, many, many trees, and He was a Hindu personality, Hindu, so he was just wandering here and there, left all his responsibilities, just wandering around here, like hippie type. So he came in this forest and he was sitting under the tree and he said, I was just under this one tree, I'm so thirsty. I'm really so thirsty. And I've been wandering so long and I don't see any lakes or rivers or waterfalls. I don't know where I can find some water. I really like to have some water. He was half delirious, half sleeping, half awake, very thirsty. And he looked, opened his eyes and he saw next to the tree a pot of water. He said, this is wonderful. A pot of water, I can slake my thirst. So he drank some water. Then when he drank water, then he felt his fatigue was removed. He felt relief from the fatigue of walking because water has that quality to remove fatigue. And then he was thinking, now my fatigue is removed. I'm feeling a little hungry. I feel a little hungry. But I'm in the middle of the forest, so I can't find any potato chips out here. I can't find any cookies or samosas or puri, sabji, chapati. I can't find out here. It's not possible. All there's here is some leaves, and how can I eat anything? And again, he's kind of dozing a little bit and thinking, wish I could. And he opened his eyes. He saw a plate of samosas and sabji puris. He said, this is amazing. Where does this come from? How does this happen? This is a very extraordinary forest. Anyway, whatever. God's mercy, Bhagavan's mercy. So he ate all that big plate of prasadam, drank some more water, then he slept a little bit. Then he woke up and he said, this is really amazing place. Then he started remembering, I remember my grandfather. He told me that there's a holy place in UP called Vrindavan. And in this holy place of Vrindavan, there are many, many forests and trees. And those trees have a very special quality. They're called Kalpavriksha trees. Whatever your desire is, they will fulfill. So I don't know where I've wandered. I have no map. I don't know. There's no signposts or road maps or road markings. I don't know where I am. But by chance, maybe I've wandered. Maybe this is the forest of Vrindavan. And maybe these are Kalpavriksha trees all around here. And because I was desiring, like that was my kalpa, and this tree, I had this desire, sankalpa, and then this tree fulfilled my desire, gave me water and a nice prasad. Anyway, whatever, I don't know, I feel good. It's getting late now, the sun is setting, and I feel rather tired from eating all that prasad. It's time to take rest. So I think I'll take rest now. But wait a minute, this is a forest, a pretty lonely forest. I'm thinking maybe there may be some tiger in this forest. Maybe that tiger might come my way and eat me. So he's thinking it like that and thinking maybe tiger. Then all of a sudden the tiger manifested. The tiger manifested. And then he said, you ate all this prasadam, now I'm going to eat you. You're going to be my prasadam. So the tiger ate him. So therefore he had all his desires fulfilled by touching that Kalpavriksha tree. But that one negative desire was also fulfilled. And he was afraid, I may be eaten. That desire I don't want. So when we touch the Srimurti, this is number 40 on the list here, touching the Srimurti. And then number 41 is looking at Srimurti. Srimurti Ikshanam. So there should be a quality of how we look at the deity, how we glance at the deity. It should have that some touch or some mood of how the Vraja Gopis would glance at the form of the Lord when they would see Krishna, Sakshat Krishna, and they would, with the open cups of their eyes, they would drink deeply the form of Krishna, take deep into their heart, not just Krishna. It was no question of Krishna bouncing off their eyeballs or momentary. We see thousands and thousands of images when we go in the car and, as I mentioned, thousands of animals, beasts, people, this, that. No impression, no acceptance. We see so many things. But when we come before the Lord and see Krishna, then there should be, everything else should stop. All their activity should stop. And all of our senses should become eyes. All of our senses, our nose, our ears, our hands, everything should become eyes. And we should just look. All our power of concentration, all our power of attraction, Because the ears are attracted to some sense object, the tongue is attracted to some sense object, the nose, the hands. So all the attraction that's residing, all the attracting power that's residing with all the, within all the senses should be withdrawn. All that attracting power from all the senses should be withdrawn, and it should be deposited into the eyes. And that should augment or enhance and increase the attracting power of the eyes. And all the attracting power of all the four senses should mix with the fifth sense, the eye, and the eyes should look at Krishna. And then deeply drink like a vacuum cleaner, like a 100 horsepower vacuum cleaner. You know what a vacuum cleaner is? You turn it on and cleans the dirt from the floor. It sucks everything, all the dust and dirt. Usually a vacuum cleaner is a half horsepower motor, or maybe one horsepower. You've seen them. So imagine if you had 100 horsepower vacuum cleaner. Your whole sofa would go inside there. Your bed would go inside the vacuum cleaner. Your mother-in-law, your father-in-law. If you don't like your mother-in-law, you just lift up the vacuum cleaner. And put her in the bag and throw her out. Such vacuum cleaners should be invented. It would be very popular in India. This one whoosh, and the mother-in-law is finished. So this, our eyes should become like two vacuum cleaners, you know, taking taking Krishna into our heart and locking him there. Looking at his face, his smiling face, his beautiful dancing lotus eyes, and his beautiful soft cheeks, and then his enticing lips, and then his bold and proud chest, and his long, sinuous arms, and then the clothing he's wearing, and the garlands, and the jewelry, and ornaments, and the unguents, and sandalwood, the whole, everything together, every aspect. Very nice. We have these cameras that take these digital photographs, 500 at a shot. Then you go home and you, oh, this 450 are no good. You wipe it off. So when we come before the Lord, our mind is full of so many digital photographs. So many digital photographs of Maya Davis and Maya Davies. Maya Davis for the women and Maya Davies for the men. So when you come before the, what's that called, the chip or something? You wipe off the chip or something. What do you call it? Memory card. So our memory card, we have so many digital photos of Maya Davies and Mayic images, and so many digital photos of Maya Davis and Mayic images. So when we come before the Lord, we should say, oh, Shamsundar, will you please help me to, what do you say, wipe off? Or what do you say in your memory card? Delete. Will you please, oh my Lord Shamsundar, oh Damodar, oh Giridhari, will you please delete all these unnecessary digital photos from my memory card? Please, and wholesale, just one button, empty the trash can. Do you want to empty all the contents of the trash can? Yes, yes, yes. Boom, choo. And they go, make a little sound like that in the computer, like crushing a paper, right? So, oh Krishna, you are the master computer programmer. You are the master software designer. So now I'm standing, please, my motherboard is in a terrible shape. Please, now my camera, I have a dual lens camera. Hasselblad or something like that, they have two lens up and down. So I have two lenses on my camera in my head, and I have so many bad images. I have so many bad photos here on my memory card. So please delete all them and fill my camera eyes with your sweet, sweet form, Madhurya Rupam. And then may that just fill the memory card of my heart and mind. So when I walk out of the temple, then the only thing I'll remember on my memory card, and the only form I'll see in my mind is your form and Radha's form. And all other Maya Devas, Maya Devis, they're deleted in the trash can. And I empty the trash can. I didn't delete them into the trash can. I deleted them into the trash can and I emptied the trash can. Do you want to delete these things for good? maybe, hey, can't we just hold them in the trash can and I can go in the trash can later and pick them out? That's generally the modus operandi.
Yes, yes, delete these. Yes, yes, good Sangha, Hare Kata, good class. Yes, I have to delete these things. Yes, I delete them.
I put them in the trash can. Now there's no Hare Kata, no Sangha, but I have my trash can. Oh, wow, look at this trash can. Mm. Oh, that's very nice. And someone says, hey, what are you doing in this old dirty trash can all lying around here in the corner of your mind, occupying half your heart? Empty this thing. Hey, okay, you clean your house, I'll clean mine in my time. It's not spring yet, you know, spring cleaning. Now it's December, January, February, many months I have left. Springtime comes, we do what we call spring cleaning. Well, spring cleaning means Deepavali. Deepavali in India is spring cleaning. It's not spring, it's fall, it's autumn. So everyone cleans their house, and they clean their heart by showing love, and put the envy down for a day. And, oh, I can't stand my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, my uncle. Anyway, oh, here, have a box of sweets. Here, have a suitcase. Here, have some mala. And then the husbands, they hate their wives. They say, no, you must buy some gold today. It's Deepavali. You have to have some gold. So then all the jewelry stores do a booming business during Deepavali, and husbands drag their wives into the store. Usually the wives are dragging their husbands. But on this one day of the year, the husband says, yes, yes, come, buy gold. Decorate, ornament yourself. So the envy, all the envy goes out, goes into hibernation mode, to follow the same line. All the envy goes into hibernation mode, and then for one day, love and sweets and feasting and gifts and painting the house, everything's clean. Next day, okay, I hate your guts, you know, I'm filing for a divorce, if you know. But Deepavali is actually a very joyful day. Naya Sal Mubarako, Happy New Year. Naya Sal Mubarako. Let's say, Happy New Year. So, this is a joyous day for everyone in this land of ours, land of Krishna. So, we'll go on to more of these things. Arati ko kotsa vadeshcha shravanam tatre ekshanam. Smriti jnanam tata dasyam sakyam atman nivedanam. Sounds familiar. This, now some of the nine limbs of devotion being mixed in here. Number 42 is seeing or witnessing the offerings of light, incense, water in the conch shell, etc. to the deities in the temple. And also celebrating the events of the Lord, that means the utsavs and festivals of the Lord, Chulan Yatra, Holi, Janmashtami, Nokavihar, boat festival. Celebrating the events of the Lord and his devotees, Abhirbhav and Tirubhav festivals, and seeing the worship in the temple. So these are all listed as number 42. And here, 42 means 22 in this list. Seeing the Artik and festivals. Seeing the Artik and festivals. So here we get a little bit more elaboration. So everyone knows about that. 43. Listening to the name and glories of the Lord. Hearing the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord. That's obviously that's something we try to do every day. Hear the name of the Lord when we're chanting japa, and hear the class of Bhagavat, Nityam Bhagavata Seveya. Every day we're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and other Gaudiya Granth scriptures. So we're fulfilling this 43rd limb of devotion, listening to the name and glories of the Lord. 44, looking for the Lord's grace, or observing the grace of the Lord. Here it is. Accepting the mercy of the Lord. This is number 44 out of 64. Looking for the Lord's grace, or observing the grace, or when you get it, then you observe it. Where is it? Where is the mercy? And then when it comes, oh, it's coming. Here's the mercy that's happening. I'm experiencing it. Smriti Dhyanam Vaishnam. So this is actually a principle of devotion, bhakti, and bhakti rasa smriti sindhu. Looking for the Lord's grace. This is our, basically the goal of all of our activities, all of our actions are meant to attract the mercy of the Lord, the grace of the Lord. We're looking for it, we're hoping for it. And then sometimes it comes. Sometimes it comes in a small way, the mercy comes in a small way. Sometimes it comes in a grand way. But it always comes, it's always coming, and we have to look for it. We may be a little dull due to circumstance or lack of advancement or lack of faith. We don't see the installments, the regular installments of mercy coming our way. So we say, oh, nothing's happening. I'm chanting, I'm performing devotional service. Nothing's happening to me. No change, no improvement. Sometimes we get in these negative mindsets where we think everything is a waste of time, or we become complacent. But actually, it takes some. We meet with other devotees and they look at our situation and they say, wait a minute, what are you talking about? Now let's think about things in a logical way. The very fact that you're still here means you're getting mercy of the Lord. The fact that you're still walking on the path of devotion, bhakti marg, in any way, shape, or form, maybe walking with a crutch, walking or in a wheelchair, or maybe walking with two crutches, or maybe limping, maybe severely wounded, but you're on the marg, you're walking. You haven't fallen into the abyss of forgetfulness. You haven't left the Lord. You haven't left the Lord's devotees. You may be hanging on by the skin of your teeth, as they say in America. Very unusual phrase, but hanging on by the skin of your teeth. Think of it literally, it sounds ridiculous. But at any rate, these are the colloquial expressions often sound senseless, but they mean something to all those who use them. So this is, you may be barely hanging on, or hanging in there, as they say, but you're there, and that means that Krishna has not become dissatisfied. He may be dissatisfied with some of your attempts, but he's satisfied. He's keeping you in the fold. He's feeding you, he's nourishing you, he's giving his mercy. And by that, remaining in that sanctified position, we have an opportunity to rectify ourselves and improve ourselves, improve our devotion, improve our surrender, improve our service, and improve our loving relationship and attachment for Krishna, and renew our loving feeling towards Krishna and our sincerity, renew our sincerity and pick up again our enthusiasm and walk in a more healthy way on the path of bhakti, and then feel the renewed mercy flowing. Oh, now it's flowing. Now the mercy is really flowing again. I feel it. I was in a low ebb, a low time in my devotional experience, but now things are good. Then, of course, if you're inclined towards astrologers, you'll say, what's happening? Oh, now this is transcending that and this and that, and everything looks good now. Oh, yeah, okay, I feel that way too. So they give confirmation, or they give clarity, or they give some vision that you can't see on your own. That can be very helpful. At any rate, this is the point here that's being told. Looking, we should look. Looking for the Lord's grace, or observing the grace of the Lord. Tomorrow we'll start with number 45 out of 64. Is there any questions? This is kind of like back to square one. Because you're all very advanced devotees. This is all very elementary for all of you. You're deep into the ecstasies of higher practices and devotion. But for us beginners, we have to go slowly and hear these points over and over again. Sometimes people say, oh, this is so basic. This is called basic, the basic stuff. If you have a question. Yeah. What your question is that, and there's some temple somewhere where all the devotees there are allowed to worship the deity, the Govardhan Shila, Krishna.
No, no,
excuse me?
Bathing.
Oh. In this temple, all the devotees are allowed to bathe the Govardhan Shila. That means the karmis and everyone, is any kind of requirement? Do you have to be initiated? So they can be initiated or non-initiated, is that right?
Anybody, but they have a...
They have to wear some clean clothes.
Yeah, clean clothes, and also they have to wear
a yeah, devotion, clean. In order to have the privilege to bathe the Govardhan Shila, I suppose on Govardhan Puja, one day a year, not every day, but one day a year, the... anyone can come and wear clean devotional clothing, Sarayur Dhoti, and have the opportunity to bathe the Govardhan Shila. And the question is, what do I think about that? So, if you think of, there's different ways to look at it, strictly according to Shastra, when it's talking about the rules and regulations for puja, they're talking about Shalagram Shila, or properly installed deities, then only men can do puja, but then we have family deities. This is like in temples, only men do puja in India. This is the standard. But there's a family deity, then the wives, the brahmanis, the wives also do puja. And you have Govardhan Shila, so Govardhan Shila, he also doesn't require any installation, just like at Shalagram Shila, Krishna is fully there. But we see in Vrindavan itself that everyone worships the Govardhan Shila. And it seems that Govardhan, because the deities are Krishna, they're Krishna. There's very strict rules for Krishna Murtis, three Krishna Murtis, Murtis of Krishna. They're very strict rules. But the Murti of, let's say, not Murti, but the Govardhan Shila is a very special manifest, a very special presentation of Krishna. So we have to examine the differences. The differences are... The Govardhan Shila is specifically manifesting not only as Bhagavan, as Sri Krishna, but also as a devotee. The Krishnamurti is Krishna, not the devotee of Krishna. So there's rules, very specific rules about worshipping the Murti of Krishna. But in Govardhan, he's also a devotee. So the devotees are very lenient, very compassionate, very liberal. So if you were seeing, if you're worshipping Giraj, I would surmise that Giraj is allowing anyone who's wearing clean devotional clothing to come and bathe him on this one day, Govardhan Puja, as a show of his Vaishnav compassion, as a show of his kripata, his tendency to be merciful. Vaishnav kripambudi. Vaishnav kripambudi. The Vaishnav is the ocean of mercy, ambudi. So on this day he says, yes, let everyone get my mercy. I am Haridas Varya. I am the greatest devotee of Hari. I am Giriraj. And Radharani has glorified me in Vainogita. She says, yes, Govardhan, you are Haridas Varya. You are the greatest of all the devotees. And therefore, if you are the greatest of all the devotees, then you must be the most merciful and kind of all the devotees. So therefore, displaying your aspect of unlimited mercy as a Vaishnava, as a Haridas, you're allowing all of us to come and bathe you and give your mercy to us. Qualified, unqualified, man or woman, young or old. The only qualification is dhoti and a sari. No regulative principles, no japa, no diksha, no shiksha. Only dhoti and sari and come one, come all, take the mercy, wholesale, on sale. Giriraj Maharaj ki. Giriraj Arana ki. So that is my response to your question. What is your question? The question is there, let's take it back. When sometimes we take darshan, we see that deities are very elaborately and fantastically decorated with all kinds of extraordinary paraphernalia, flowers, silk flowers. In the old days, sometimes they used dyed ostrich feathers. In the early days of ISKCON, when I was there, ostrich is a very large bird. It frequents the plains of Australia or something like that. Australia? That's where they're from? Ostrich? Africa or Australia? You know, ostrich has really long legs and a big body and puts its head in the ground when it sees something. That's Australia?
Africa?
Anyway, I haven't seen one around here. But anyway, they have very large feathers. And ladies would wear those in their hats in the 1920s. They would have a hat on their head and take an ostrich feather and dye it pink, hot pink, or purple or some typical color like they like. And put it on her hat, and she would parade down Fifth Avenue thinking she was quite fashionable. Ostrich feather. So then devotees, and even in the 70s, they were still around here and there. Devotees thought these would be rather interesting to offer to Radha and Krishna. So then they would decorate Radha and Krishna and stick an ostrich feather on their head. And then Prabhupada saw it. So this is rather outlandish decoration. What is that? Doesn't look like a more mukut. Doesn't look like a more means peacock. Peacock feather crown. It's rather long and funny. Doesn't look like a peacock feather. No rainbow there. Om sign or rainbow. So they thought probably this is an ostrich feather. Ostrich? What is that ostrich? That was a big dirty bird. Probably said, Dad, take that off. What is this? This concoction. So it's the question. So this is people see all these fantastic decorations and they may have a question. The question is, are these bona fide? Is there some proper standard? The question is there some proper standard of Shilpa Shastra or Murti Puja or Murti Shastras or whatever about decorating a deity? And I'm not familiar with that, but a few books I have read. I've read books like Hari Bhakti Vilas, which are now in English. And in there's several Vilases that talk about the deity worship. So they have elaborate descriptions of how to observe Janmashtami, how to bathe the deities, what articles. So in general, we are supposed to offer pure articles to the deity. And then specifically you can see in Prabhupada's letters books there's something called silk flowers. So Prabhupada, they were decorating the deity, the personal form of the deity, the hair, etc., with silk flowers. And Prabhupada saw it, he saw they looked very beautiful. And he thought they were real flowers. They're so lifelike. And then they said, Prabhupada, these are silk. And he said, maybe that's better for decorating the altar. You can decorate the altar with these flower vases with silk flowers, but the actual form of the Lord, the Archamurti, should be real flowers with proper scent, natural scent, not some chemical spray. Natural scent. And so as far as a little bit I've read, I can understand everything should be very first class. Probably everything should be very first class and offered to the deities. I've been in numerous temples in India, and they don't go overboard with the decoration, although they have literally billions of dollars. Rangaji Temple, Venkateshwar Balaji, Srinathji and Natwara, they have billions and billions of dollars in fixed accounts. They could buy whatever. But even then, Balaji doesn't wear every single necklace he has every day. Two or three necklaces, beautiful crown, one garland. You've seen my godbrother Srinandanan, you've seen thousands of temples in India. Very tasteful, and in one sense, very simple, and not so elaborate. So this seems to be the traditional standard in the temples around India. But then there's the exception. The exception is when there's an utsav. When there's an utsav or a festival, Janmashtami, Radhashtami, Then they very elaborately decorate the altar with all natural things. There's banana trees and there's mango leaves and garlands and spread across the entranceway. And then they do rangoli with rice flour. They do all kinds of designs on the floor. These are all according to Vastu. Auspicious designs and markings everywhere. It's all done with rice flour and kumkum and kasturi and these type of things. So there are descriptions of these. And when you, if you go to a temple on some big function, then you see some very elaborate and beautiful decorations. Even then the deity is not so much, it's more like the temple is decorated. The deity practically looks the same as any other time. Some more, not much more, different, maybe different outfits, but the whole surrounding is really, oh, something's going on here. Have you seen like so many water pots here and decorations and festoons, silk festoons and entrance gates? You can read in Garga Samhita or in that's also in English, Garga Samhita. Harivamsa Purana also is describing when Krishna returns or he goes to Dwarka and how they decorate the city and how they decorate the temple. So these type of things are there. I don't know exactly what the issue you're trying to say is, but We should, in other words, we don't offer a bunch of plastic things, and everything should be natural, beautiful, costly things and articles offered to the deity. And it should, as you were indicating, part of your question, all these decorations shouldn't take away from the deity himself. You're so busy looking at all the decorations that you forget the deity. It should simply bring your attention. The way everything's done, it should focus your attention on the deity. On the Marchamurti. And that's the expertise of the pujari and the manager of the temple. Because the object of, the whole object is to take darshan of Krishna, be attracted to Krishna, become attached to Krishna, not become attached to the banana tree or the rangoli on the floor. Wow, look at that, wow. And all day long you're just looking at the rangoli, look how intricate it is, this design. And these ladies, these pujaris, they're doing it all by hand. So intricate, this chakra, that concha, and this thing. And someone says, oh, have you seen the deity? Oh, I forgot, the temple was closed by the time I was so busy photographing the rangoli that I didn't have darshan. So we have to, don't mistake the forest for the trees or whatever that, I'm not sure how that phrase goes. Trees for the forest or the forest for the trees.